Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and you're listening to the EMS Online Q&A call on Monday, February the 4th, 2013. So let's move on to our first question. Rick, what are your thoughts about an unfaithful spouse who doesn't grieve in an emotionally visible way over the pain they caused their hurt spouse? Verbally, the words of compassion are present when the subject is brought up by the hurt, but the unfaithful is not taking a lead role in the recovery of the couple. They seem to be more private and individualistic in doing their recovery work. Why could that be? Should it be different? I guess to begin, I would say it's hard to say that there's exactly one path. I mean, obviously there are some signs there that would leave me to have a little concern, because ultimately what you want to see in true sorrow, or what we might call godly sorrow, is grief. Grieving over what they've done to their mate, grieving over what they've done to another person. My first thought when someone does this is they're still concerned, maybe about what their own shame, what they've done, what it's cost them. Potentially they also might, and trust me, I'm just guessing here because I can't guess everything, but they may also be feeling a lot of guilt. And so when people move into guilt and shame, they tend to make it about them. It could also be that they've never really developed empathy skills, and in a situation like that, it's good that they're taking EMS online simply because it allows them to begin to think about how they've impacted their mate and begin to consider something beyond themselves. I mean, ultimately, it's about relationship and about learning to love. And this is why frequently infidelity can be a great thing. Not that it's a good thing ever, but in the sense of failure teaches us to try something different. And this may help this person. The last thing I'll say is if they have resentments, then there's a possibility they're not responding to their mate as a result of those resentments, and learning to forgive and letting go of the anger they may have toward their mate could remove the block they have toward responding to their mate. In other cases I've known like this, sometimes it's taken as long as 8 years for them to ultimately get it. If the marriage is doing well and they're making progress, then I think there's good reason to have hope. If, on the other hand, they're continuing to put themselves in high-risk situations and don't really see that big of a problem, then that would raise concern. Here's our second question. Rick, do you have any insight as to why a woman would feel men are only interested in her for sexual reasons? To the point where she does not make eye contact with men because she feels it's sending them the wrong message. There's a history of sexual abuse, although she's gone through years of counseling. She feels as though men see something in her that they don't in other women, like she's a target, or has some sort of vibe that she sends out to men. Is that possible? What confuses and upsets her also is she admittedly feels a sort of high from the attention she gets from these men. It all comes down to a belief system. I think that when someone gets to the place where they're thinking more about what other people are thinking about them than what they're thinking about the other people, that at one level the wounds that she's received may cause her to be more self-focused. I mean, I think it's true for men and for women. A common thought from a lot of sex addicts is when a woman makes eye contact, and this is sex addicts, not men in general, they'll think she wants to have sex with me. But it's interesting to me that on the other side of that same coin, if she's thinking that when men look at her, they want to have sex with her, it's the same sort of distorted belief system. And if she can learn the truth, and she may know the truth, then she needs to make the conscious effort to change that belief system. Because as long as we continue to just believe what we feel, or feel Because our feelings will always reflect our beliefs. As long as she continues to believe something that's not true, then she'll continue in that pattern. Knowing the truth won't change it. It's going to be changing the belief and beginning to think maybe more highly of others, maybe more highly of God, and in some ways less highly of herself. Humility is understanding, I think, in a lot of ways, you're not all that. I've even heard it said humility is having a very high view of God, which changes your view of yourself and changes your view of others. It's about having compassion toward others, not trying to control or manipulate others. If we're trying to avoid eye contact, oftentimes, and I'm not saying you want to give out wrong signals, but if we're trying to control and manipulate others, then a lot of times it's not about compassion and loving others. It's about, I guess, trying to get what we want from others. One last thing on this particular one. When someone is sexually abused, oftentimes they do have a distorted view of what they're good for, what their identity is, and sometimes that's the core of that belief. So I would hope she could challenge that belief and come to see things a new way. Here's the next question. Does there ever come a point in recovery for someone who has a sex/love addiction tendencies where that pull feeling goes away? I guess pull means temptation, or is that just part of the rest of your recovery? I know you say temptation doesn't define us, but it feels like betraying just to feel tempted towards something you know is totally self-destructive and selfish. Can we ever really change 180 degrees 100% of the time? I mean, I think that's a really good question. I think a lot of times if people over time begin to shift the belief system, just like someone who believes that if someone looks at them, then they see them a certain way, shifting beliefs will oftentimes totally eliminate temptation. Over time, being concerned for others and learning to live well eliminates temptation. I believe that at one level, though, even if you get the temptation to go away because you've begun focusing and believing something different, our old habits of how we think are very much like riding a bicycle. While they may be gone, we can always reenact or activate those old ways of being or thinking. They still exist in our basal ganglia. For that reason, relapse prevention is terribly important. When I relapsed 5 years into recovery, it was because I allowed myself to pick up old patterns that I had eliminated in my life. And honestly, the temptation had completely gone away. So I do know that that's possible. Now, is it possible for a lifetime? Only if one continues to try to master life and to live well, to stay focused on the right things, continually trying to improve. If we let up our guard and we stop those activities of good living, of living well, if we get in really difficult situations and don't continue to press forward, they will come back. So I hope that answers the question. And I would say yes, but be sure you continue doing what you need to do, because if you allow yourself back into old ways of being, then you can fall back into those old habits. Final question. Rick, in your experience, would you say that two very prominent catalysts to having an affair would be undiagnosed depression and or anxiety, since affairs, even if you are not a sex addict, create similar feelings to using drugs? Absolutely. For some people, the good feelings that come from that behavior certainly can serve as an amazing antidepressant. I don't know that people particularly do that on purpose, but just the fact that if someone's feeling down, it can make them feel better, certainly would be one of the motivators that makes people move that way and would make it appealing, because we want to feel alive. And oftentimes, if people haven't continued doing the disciplines of connecting with their mate and growing in that skill development, you can become lonely. And the fact that something begins to break in on that depression or that loneliness leaves us open to trying new things. I mean, again, like I say, it's as long as the relationship is giving you everything you want, it's pragmatically smart to do the right thing. However, when the blessings of that relationship begin to subside or you're not getting what you want and life is hard, it won't be long until the allure of something else can come along and to help with the doldrums and to help with that boredom or that depression. So those are great questions today. Thank you, everybody. And I look forward to talking with you later. I hope everybody has a great week. I'll be talking to you in 2 weeks. To healing.